Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda, and I've got a very great, interesting guest with me today, Mr. Randy Gage. Randy is a thought-provoking, critical thinker who will make you approach your business and your life in a whole new way. Randy is the author of 13 books translated into 25 languages, including the New York Times bestsellers Risky is the New Safe and Mad Genius. He has spoken to more than 2 million people across more than 50 countries and is a member of both the Speakers Hall of Fame and the Direct Selling Hall of Fame. When he is not prowling the podium or locked in his lonely writer's garret, you'll probably find him playing third base for a softball team somewhere. It is my pleasure to welcome Randy to our show today.
Hey, Belinda. Great to be on with you.
Yeah, it's great to be on with you, too. I've followed your career for many, many years. So very, very acquainted with you and your speaking abilities. We actually shared a stage one time, not at the same time, but in the same conference at Arbonne many, many years ago.
Yeah, that was probably 20 years ago, right?
I was just going to say that was about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So, let's just let's dive in here. Why don't you fill in some of those gaps of your bio and tell us more about what you're doing right now. Let's talk about your new book and all kinds of fun things about life and business.
Yeah, new book is called Radical Rebirth. It's my 14th book now. And I feel like it's really the culmination of my work for the last 20 years. All of the books I've written, all of the podcasts, all of the blogs, I believe that writing makes you crystallize your thinking. It forces you to be a better critical thinker, more logical, rational. Can you carry the thread through? I can do like a speech. You mentioned, we did Arbonne, right? So I can do a speech and get a standing ovation for 5 minutes and they loved it. And then I'm going to go back in the green room and collapse afterward and get my green tea. And then I'm going to say, oh my God, I was going to tell him the 5 points of ABC and I only did 4. I forgot to tell him number 5. You don't notice that in a speech. If a speaker right. is gifted, right? The audience is there in the moment with you. When you put it down in black and white in a book, even a blog, anywhere you have to write it and get it down in black and white, if you jump the shark, it's going to become readily apparent. And so writing Radical Rebirth was really transformational for me, I think, in the sense that it really clarified it helped me figure out what I think about personal growth and self-development and this crazy, convoluted journey we call life.
Right. So for our listeners that haven't, I've read, I'm through about 75% of it. I always like to try to read ferociously before my interview. So I have gotten almost to the very end and I will complete that. But very thought-provoking. For sure. And so what would you like to tell our listeners? Like, what are the 3 main things that you think you have delivered or that are the listener here might say, I got to go grab that. Why do you feel that it's been your best work? And then what do you think are the 3 things that somebody might walk away with?
I think it's my best work because it's challenging to the reader. I'm not pandering to them. Not that I usually do, but this is very in your face, as you know, getting 3/4 of the way through it. I'm too old and I'm too rich to pull punches with people. It's like, let's talk truth. Let's talk about what's real. Let's talk about what really matters. And I think there's millions of people that are living a life that's not their life. It's not their story. They're a dentist because their father was a dentist and their grandfather was a dentist. Or they serve mm-hmm. in the military because 11 generations of our family has served in the military. And they never took 10 minutes to say, I think I'd rather be a choreographer, you know, or maybe I should start a nonprofit and build wells in Africa, or maybe I should be a sculptor. They didn't really, you know, they think that, you know, later when I retire, I'll mm-hmm. do it. And I'm, you know, life is too short for that. Man, I can't tell you how many funerals I've been to in the last couple of years, you know, like this last year, no funeral, you know, the funerals were like virtual, but people were still dying. I'm, you know, facing the loss of somebody in my family right now who's in the very end stage of a degenerative disease. Life is too short to live somebody else's story. You just got to. So the book is really about how to recreate yourself, how to rebirth yourself. And it took me writing it to figure out what was the reason I wrote it. And it was only, and what I didn't even realize it after I finished the book, but I finished the book and I started doing, you know, podcasts and radio shows and stuff on the book tour. Mm-hmm. And it took me back to the time it was Christmas Eve and I was in the Marriott Hotel here in Miami, writing my suicide journal because I just felt like there was really no reason for me to go on living. And I was really blessed. I had, you know, professional help and I had called my therapist and he called me back and, you know, figuratively talked me off the edge. And it took writing the book to realize that what I learned is you don't have to, even if you hate your life, even if you hate yourself, and that's where I was at that point in my life, you don't have to kill yourself. You can kill off the parts of you that aren't serving you. You can kill off the parts you don't like or the parts you actually hate. And then when you get on that journey and you're willing to make it an ongoing process, as I have, you know, my friends are, you know, they're like, well, which midlife crisis is Randy on now? Is this his fourth one or his fifth one? You know, and I love that they can make those jokes because I do, you know, I'll be happy if I can have another 4 or 5 midlife crises before I leave this planet, right? Because I see, and that's really the premise of the book, is that you're just continually recreating yourself, moving toward becoming the highest possible version of yourself. And if you really commit to that process, there's something magical that happens along the way in that you're no longer running away from some part of you that you hate or you have to kill off. You're running toward a part of you that you want to become. And that's when, you know, life really gets magical, I think, because you're experiencing it to the utmost because you're moving toward a stage of enlightenment, a state of enlightenment. You're moving toward that highest possible version of yourself. And it's, you know, as you know, in the book, I call it divine discontent, mm-hmm. where you can still live in gratitude for all the blessings you have in your life. And I believe you can also that if you are this evolving being, you will have desires and hopes and dreams for things you want to do, have, and become. And that's good. That's, you know, I don't buy into the Zen thing of, hey, just renounce all your desires and pleasures and you'll be happy, you know?
Right.
I'm not saying that can't work and there's people that do that. And if they're happy with that, I bless them. I hope it's mm-hmm. wonderful. It's just not my thing. My thing is, no, I love the fact that I desire to do, have, and become more because I have to become a better person in order to achieve that.
I think it's interesting. So two things struck me as I was reading this. And one is I've really been in really taking my whole message this next year. Like my word of 2022 is going to be dreams, because I think too many people have left dreams behind or quit dreaming, or people that are in sort of the age bracket that I'm in feel like, oh, my, you know, it's time for somebody else to dream, or those are young people's ideas. And the thing about it is, and the other day I was so excited. I landed a really big interview and I was super excited. And I felt like I was in like high school again. Uh-huh. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I had that exact same excitement and energy and a new direction of moving in. And, you know, I have an uncle who's 99 and he still talks about he's going to buy a fishing boat. Like he is still like dreaming about he's going to do this. And so it doesn't stop at any age. And I just, that your book talks about that. I skimmed the last three. It's like, they're going to be go-to action at the very, very end. and one of those things was about dreaming. And I think that, and you've said that now three, four times in this discussion, but it's an important piece that you can continue to dream about bigger things and possibilities and what's next. And when people let that go, I think they just become extremely complacent.
Yeah, it's like, I like sports cars, so I've had quite a few of them, and I'll be, you know, at a red light waiting and some car will pull up to me and there'll be kids in the car and they're, hey, Mr. Viper, cool car, man. I love your car. When I grow up, I'm going to have a Viper. But adults never say that to me, because adults they're already grown up and they're like, well, I'm driving the minivan. I'm never going to get a Viper, or I'm never going to get a Bentley Continental GT or a Jag or whatever. They've just given up because, you know, life got in the way. And as you're articulating, that does not have to be that way. And it shouldn't be that way. And obviously I'm at a stage of my life where the horizon in front of me is probably much closer than the one behind me. Now, I won't affirm that, you know, maybe there'll be some great genetic breakthrough that occurs and I may live to be 195, and, you know, but at this moment in time, the odds are the horizon in front of me is much closer, right? But I still believe my best work is in front of me. I believe the best book I'm ever going to write is going to be the next one. I believe the next blog post I'm going to write is going to be the best one yet. And I believe my relationships, my health, my mental harmony, my spiritual harmony, I believe the best days are still in front of me. And that's the state I think we have to get to, all of us, if we want to really get the most out of this limited, very short time we get to spend on this planet.
So the other thing that gave me a lot of thought, and I've been reading a lot on it, is but COVID really was a disruptor of many industries and is turning out to be even more. I mean, there's just a lot of talk right now. People can't get people to work in restaurants, and, you know, one group of people is saying, well, it's because nobody wants to go back to work. But in reality, all those people, a lot of those people have decided, I'm not doing this anymore. You know, I got forced out of work and I went and found another job, and one that, quite honestly, I actually really enjoy a lot more. And I've talked to a lot of people that it caused a disruption in that it forced them to take pause. It forced them to push the pause button on life and say, you know, I really don't even like what I'm doing anyway. So this is the perfect time to go figure out something new for my life. So I would have to think that your book comes at a really great time for a lot of people in this disruption that all of us faced together. This press pause are now really rethinking what's important. What do I want to do? Is it possible for me to do something else? Surely you have thought about that, or have even experienced conversations with people around that.
Yeah, for sure. The delivery date for the book to my publisher was like May of 2020. So around April of 2020, my editors just ghosted me. I kept writing and sending emails. It's like no replies were coming. And it's a newer publishing house. They're not that big. And I was the first project for this editor because he had been an editor for me at another publisher. And he had gone here and started a new imprint. And I think they got so scared with COVID. They just like, this is not the time to put out a book. You know, we were brand new. We're not going to take a shot on this project. And so I had to find another publisher. Because I looked at it and said, my God, this is the perfect book for what the world is going through right now. Because for just the reasons you mentioned that, you know, I still to this day say the greatest gift I ever got was being shot and left for dead in a robbery. Because since that moment in my life, I've never taken a sunrise for granted or a sunset for granted, right? A relationship mm-hmm. for granted. I recognize the really how quickly things can disappear, how quickly our lives can be extinguished, right? So I think there is a lot of COVID was and is a horrific thing for the planet, mm-hmm. right? I personally lost several friends to COVID. I had COVID and I had one of those long haul horrible cases.
Oh.
But the hidden blessings from that are so, we're just discovering how many there are, right? And for just the kind of things you mentioned where people really did have a chance to, you know, where bosses really did. Before COVID happened, it was November of last year. I have Lornette, my assistant, who's worked for me for like 30 years. And I just had a conversation with her. Do we really need an office anymore? Do you really need to go into an office? I have like a client who flies in to see me once a year, which I could easily do in a hotel lobby. I mean, do you know? And she was like, oh my God, I would love to work from home. And, you know, I drive an hour each way. And, you know, so when COVID hit, we had just expired the lease on my office and she was working from home and it worked out perfectly. And now there's a lot of employers who are saying, do we really need 40,000 square feet in downtown Manhattan office space when, you know, and so many employees are saying, do I really need to go in the office 5 days a week? Could I go in the office 2 days a week and work from home 3 days a week? You know, and could I, and wow, can I really, you know, how many people, you know, my mother is 86, I think, 85 or 86, and she can do a Zoom call now, right? She can talk mm-hmm. to her grandchildren and anybody on a Zoom call. She can order groceries online. She can order stuff on. She would have never learned all that stuff if COVID didn't come around, right? Because who learns that stuff in their 80s? If you haven't learned it, you know, before right. that, you're just going to coast to the finish line figuring I can make it to the coffin without ever having to learn this crap, you know? So
yep.
COVID made millions and millions of people rethink a lot of things about their work and their life, and that's a real blessing. If you choose to learn those lessons the universe has given us.
Right, absolutely. So just to give our listeners a little bit of background for those that don't know you, why don't you just take us kind of down the journey of like where this entrepreneurial journey started for you and now where you are today?
I started as a minimum wage dishwasher, high school dropout, teenage alcoholic, teenage drug addict, was in jail for armed robbery when I was 15. So my dream when I finally went on the straight and narrow was, wow, maybe one day I could be a restaurant manager, you know, and wear a tie and have a big ring of keys and you know, walk around pouring coffee. How's your dinner this evening? Right? I mean, that's as big as I could dream at that point in my life. And I got exposed to direct selling back when I was 20, and that was transformational for me because nobody in my family was entrepreneurs or thought about being an entrepreneur. We all traded hours for money. So that kind of woke me up. The entrepreneurial, I made some money in that. And then like an idiot, I took that money and invested in a restaurant and lost the restaurant and lost everything. When I was like 30, I was, had my business seized by the IRS, you know, and they auctioned it off for taxes. So I've been through all of that journey, but I did, develop the desire to be an entrepreneur, and that served me ever since. And so I've, you know, I have done really well in direct selling. I've done really well in real estate, and I've done well as a information entrepreneur, kind of teaching the stuff that I did. So I'm a, you know, when I write a book like Mad Genius or Risky is the New Safe about being an entrepreneur, I don't write it from a college professor's theory viewpoint. I write it from a guy who has had to make payroll and knows what it is to have to make payroll every week. And so kind of my work started as into as marketing and entrepreneurial, and really where I've migrated over the last 25 years is the principles of prosperity. And so my books, my blog, my, you know, my podcast is called the Power of Prosperity Podcast. I've written a number of books on prosperity. That's what my blog posts are about. And that's what I feel like the Radical Rebirth book is, kind of practical application. How do you apply the principles of prosperity in the real world, in your marriage mm-hmm. and relationships and your job and your investments and your health and, you know, all areas of your life.
Mm-hmm. So for people wanting to do that, is there three tips, three things that you would say to focus on first?
The first step is you have to look back at your core foundational beliefs. About in the book, I look at six areas of your life, you know, the big ones that matter. What's your belief about God and religion, money and success, health and wellness, marriage and relationships? You know, because there's so many people that are programmed, they're brainwashed with limiting negative beliefs that money is bad, rich people are evil, it's spiritual to be poor, you know. It's normal to gain 5 pounds, 10 pounds for every decade of your life. It's normal to eat 90% of your diet, which is manufactured substances, which is not fruits or vegetables or nuts. It's normal to take 15 prescription drugs a day to stay alive. You know, that's just programming that people got because they never went back and said, okay, what are my core foundational beliefs about money and success, about marriage and relationships? So you start with that. You got to learn, okay, what's the programming I have? And then you have to ask the question, you know, the next step, if you're, you know, we try to say three tips or three steps to address your question would be, okay, are those beliefs serving me? The belief that I was born a sorry sinner and that I need to repent and I won't get my reward until the afterlife. Does that belief really serve me? Or is that doctrines and dogma that maybe doesn't serve me? Does, you know, if your mother and father, you know, battled all the time or one was abusive, you had a core foundational belief about marriage before you were 10 years old. You know, are you still carrying out that belief when you're 40 or 50? Or have you ever gone back and questioned it? So you find the beliefs that you have. What are they? Then you look at, okay, when did I get them? How did I get them? Are those beliefs serving me? And most of the time, and that's the basis of pretty much all of my work, is most of the time, the answer is no, those beliefs are not serving you. So the last step would be, okay, what is the empowering belief that I can replace this one with? And that's where the breakthroughs live.
Wow, it's pretty intense when you really stop and think about it. You know, I mean, it's I think people are looking for, I thought of this as I was reading it, for people that are looking for a quick fix, like just give me the answer, just give me the answer. But it's really a lot of really diving deep into the core of how you're programmed.
Yeah, because the real secret sauce in all this is self-awareness. Do you mm-hmm. have the self-awareness to go up to 30,000 feet and look at yourself objectively? And look at the fact, oh, wow, my phone just pinged. It said that Mary commented on Becky's post on Facebook. Now, I know Mary and I know Becky, so I need to click this link right away and see what they said. And then it turns out that Mary said something about Trump that infuriates me, so I'm a Hillary person and I'm going to, you know, cancel her. Or she said something about Hillary and I'm a Trumpster, so I'm going to, you know, and you just, can you rise above and say, no, this, I'm just being manipulated by Facebook. They're creating outrage to get me to spend hours on the site so they can sell my eyeballs to more advertisers. Can I rise above that? Can I have the self-awareness to realize, you know, I'm just being manipulated like a mindless puppet? Can I rise above myself and say, wow, I'm repeating the same negative relationship mistakes that my mother and father did, and I'm turning into my parents? Or, wow, you know, the flight attendant asked me, did I want an eye opener? And so, yes, I had 3 screwdrivers before we took off, and it's a 6:30 a.m. flight. And I had 4 more on the flight to Cleveland, so I had 7 drinks before 10 a.m. You know, am I self-aware enough to realize, you know, I turned into an alcoholic just like my father? You know, those are the kind of, you know, that kind of self-awareness to really look at yourself objectively is so difficult to do, but that's where the breakthroughs are. So that, like I say, that's the secret sauce, because we like to think, you're right, we have all these cliches and platitudes and live your dream and create your destiny and be the change. But how does that really work? And then you have to break it down. And the thing that I think shocks people with the elegance and simplicity of it is that you don't really create your destiny. You create your daily habits, and then your daily habits create your destiny. So the process is, you know, you've got to reverse engineer the process and say, okay, I don't like the way my life is working right now, or the way my career is going right now. So I'm going to go back and reverse engineer the process. I'm going to look at what is the programming I have, what beliefs did that programming create? What vision did I create based on the beliefs I have? And then based on this vision you have, you either have a positive vision, a neutral mm-hmm. vision, or a negative vision. And lots of, you know, a couple billion people have a neutral or a negative vision. And if you have a negative vision, that is going to, or even a neutral one, that's going to impact you, what you do for your daily actions. If you're 90 pounds overweight and taking 15 medications and type 2 diabetes and you're 10 minutes away from them amputating your leg, you're probably not thinking, you know, I should get up and jog 5 miles today, right? Because your vision doesn't even include good health, right? But if you have a positive vision and you feel, okay, hey, I'm going to start with taking a walk every day, and then I'm going to move to a brisk walk, and then I'm going to get into a regular exercise routine. you know, I'm going to eat better. I'm going to drink healthier. I'm going to get some fresh air and some sunshine. If your vision is positive, it impacts your daily habits. So when you reverse engineer that process, you go back, you question those the programming you're getting. What are the books you're reading? What's the show you want? You know, and you know, because you read the Rebirth book, I prosecute the case for all of the mind viruses that we get infected with books, movies, television, plays, opera, social media, the regular media, and 90% of that programming is the negative stuff. Money is bad, rich people are evil, it's spiritual to be poor, to be rich, you got to be a bad parent, to be a successful company, you got to plunder the environment and exploit your workers and steal, right? It's just all of this negative programming. And then you have all of the, what I call the real matrix, all the algorithms from Walmart and Amazon and Google and social media that push all your buttons and manipulate you to, you know, for outrage and fear and contrived controversy. And of course your life is messed up because you're rocketing around like a pinball in a pinball machine. Mm-hmm. You got to stop, take a breath, go up to 30,000 feet and do that self-awareness thing and look at your life and yourself objectively.
So, signature question of our show is, what does working from your happy place mean to you?
For me, it's writing. It's usually writing my next book. I'm a loner. I'm happy when I'm ensconced in my lonely writer's garret, hunched over my keyboard, typing out my next book. Or my next blog post, because it's just writing, because writing is medicinal for me. It's a spiritual experience for me, and it tells me what I'm thinking, right? Like I literally mm-hmm. just printed the last word of typed the last word of a blog post maybe 15 minutes before we started this interview. It's 15 pages. It's more than 4,000 words. It started as, wow. It was like a 3-paragraph look at Web 3.0 and how things like cryptocurrencies and NFTs, how it's going to affect us from a prosperity standpoint, you know, real world. For the average person who's not an investment banker and not a Silicon Valley investor or whatever, what is all this Bitcoin, Dogecoin, Ethereum, NFTs, what does all this stuff really mean? And so I always approach, like I did in my earlier books, I approach technology from the layperson's point of view. Like, I don't care about the computer code. I want to know, how is this going to impact our life? So I started mm-hmm. off with what I thought was this 3 or 4 paragraph yeah. post, and all of a sudden it's 15, 16 pages. But that's my happy place, because I'm finding out what I'm thinking. I'm clarifying my philosophy about life. So I'm just blessed in the sense that I've been able to manifest a vocation that allows me to do what I really want to do, which is, in essence, I'm a philosopher, right? So just okay. like yep. Socrates used to go to the town square and stand on a crate, you know, that I go to my blog or my podcast or my book and I philosophize and I figure out what's my philosophy of life, and I've been able to manifest a career where people actually pay me money to hear what my philosophies are so that they can evaluate them and think about them, and it makes them it helps them formulate their own philosophy.
Right. Or consider their thoughts or what their beliefs. Yeah. Like, that is really what philosophy does, is it helps you to consider what you've been thinking or a different way of thinking about something. Absolutely. So what advice would you give to others wanting to, you know, do something different right now. I mean, like right now, really, the whole workforce is being disrupted from every industry. You know, it's reported right now, anywhere, depending on what article you want to read, between 1 and 3 million people have started their own business in this last year. I know more books and songs have been written than ever before. And then we've got people completely leaving industries and deciding that that's just not for them anymore. And those industries are struggling right now. The restaurant industry being right at the top of that list is really struggling to find people to work. And the people are saying we don't want to work under those conditions, of which has been acceptable for year after year. So for those people wanting to get on this entrepreneurial journey, what advice would you give to them?
First of all, go for it. If you're really thinking about a change in your life, just make the change. Just jump into, you can't dip your toe in the pool. It's too cold. You just got to jump in. And there's never been a greater time to be alive in human history. This is, if you could jump in that DeLorean with Michael J. Fox and go to any time frame anywhere, this would be the moment you'd want to come to. This blog I'm just finished about this Web 3.0, I believe this is the seminal moment in human history, this point. What is going to happen with Web 3.0, with decentralized finance, decentralized autonomous organizations, the blockchain, cryptocurrencies, NFTs, what all the possibilities from these and how all the internet is going to redo the way we communicate, the way we educate, the way we market, the way we buy, the way we're entertained, the way we wage war, the ways we forge the peace. Everything is going to be impacted by this. It's the most, you know, I believe looking back in history, they will say, wow, there was like the Industrial Revolution, the Agricultural Revolution, and there was Web 3.0 when the whole world got reinvented because of the internet. So that's going to be a time of a lot of pressing challenges and obstacles and setbacks. And that's, of course, when the greatest fortunes are created, when the greatest opportunities arrive. And that's the moment we live in right now. If you want to, you know, anybody listening to us right now could start a podcast, could start a TV show, could start a radio network, could start a newspaper, a newsletter. You know, all the barriers to entry are gone now because of technology, because of the internet. And it's like, if you have to sell your house, that you bought so much house and you got $300,000 worth of extra mortgage that's just choking you, and you had to sell your house and then just go rent a nice little friendly, cozy apartment and take some money, and that's the new job. You were going to start your new thing and be a choreographer or a dancer or a blogger or a podcaster or a YouTuber or a TikToker or a thought leader or a whatever. Go for it. You know, so you have some friends who are going to say, wow, did you sell your house? And, you know, why you don't buy a new car every year? And that judgment, are you going to worry about that? Or do you want to be happy in life? You know, work from your happy place, right? Well, you can't work from your happy place if you're working from how do I keep other people happy, or how do I get my happiness by how other people judge me. No, you got to judge yourself. Mm-hmm. You got to decide for yourself. You go to your happy place and forget about the status stuff and the virtue signaling and all the social media nonsense. Life is too short for that. It's just, life is too short to live somebody else's story.
Yep, that's a great way to end this on an excellent piece of advice. So Randy, you've mentioned your blog, we've got the book. Let's recap and tell people where they can follow you, read your blog, find you.
Yeah, my randygage.com. That's my Starfleet Command site. You can find the blog, the podcast, the live streams, everything I do there. Social media, best place that I actually interact with people is on Twitter.
Perfect. Well, it has been a pleasure having you as part of our show today, and I've enjoyed it immensely, you sharing your insights and definitely thought-provoking ideas to push people to kind of basically get out of their own way and really look at their own situation and what is holding them back in their either limiting beliefs or just self-sabotage, which is what so many people live in a place of. So thank you for that. Thank you for being our guest today. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. It has been great being on with you.
Yeah. And to all of our listeners out there, thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to rate and review. We appreciate that so much. And the best form of compliment is to recommend us to a friend. Thanks again. And we'll see you next time on Work From Your Happy Place.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.